that's a whole thing. Finding the perfect pocket is peaceful. There's a peacefulness when you can just sit in that pocket and you know this is your seat and it fits your butt. And you can just, you feel this peace where like you can make these little decisions, you can think clearly and kind of do stuff because there's no like, there's no chaos, there's no pushing and like, you know. And that's a hard place to find because bands are different people and everyone's got their own idea of where they're surfing that wave, you know. But I think the biggest takeaway for me is trying to find peace, because that means there's less drama. That's all I want is peace. So I look for that in music too, and everything. Being able to sit there and feel like you can be in the moment and not be stressed. I guess it's very simple.
So here we are with Adam McDougall from the one and only Circles Around the Sun. Adam, thank you for joining me here. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm really good. Just got home to LA after this little Cats tour, where we were just in your neck of the woods. Basically just drove from your neck of the woods to here in the last couple of days. So
I'm starting this off. I want to talk about what a day would look like where you've got the whole day to yourself to just write and practice and just like what that day would look like for you.
What gets me into playing a lot recently sometimes is listening to a bunch of music, and then there'll be something that stands out, and it's usually a simple move that sounds kind of complex, something in a song that you go, what is that? And then I'll sit over and at the Rhodes over there and I'll work it out, and then it just opens up a whole box of what you can do with an idea. That's one of my favorite things, is finding a move in a song that you've always been fascinated by, a piece of music where you go, man, that little bit, that little thing, you figure it out. It's usually very simple, but it will help you write, because then you know it's plagiarism basically. But when you can really figure out what makes a song or a piece of music, there's usually a key, you know, it's like a cipher. The song will sound complex or something, and then when you get in it, you'll find whoever wrote it was thinking about this one little thing. It's usually very simple, and then it's just, they just expound it off an idea, and once you can figure out what that initial idea is, you figure out what that song or piece of music was intended to be and why, and then you can, it's usually a little musical trick, and you can kind of figure out what that writer's little thing they were focused on, and then it turn it into your music, which is, I think, how most people write. But yeah, that's mainly what it is. That'll start me sitting at a piano for hours, just listening to a record, hearing something, figuring it out, sit down, and then see if I can put it in context to anything I'm doing. And oftentimes there'll be a whole song can come out of one little, one little moment in somebody else's record that they may not have even known was that special. I don't know. It's just, you find these little moments. I'm rambling, but that's what I'll do. I don't practice very much. I should more. I did for a few years, and it really made a difference. I had a teacher for a second and was practicing running scales, doing 4 hours a day for a little bit, a few weeks. But even that few weeks changed everything. It's a shame. It's the one thing I really realize I don't do enough of is practicing, because when I do, it makes such a big difference in such a short amount of time that you go, why don't I do this all the time? And then you go back on the road and you don't have time and you forget, blah, blah, blah. Just get back in your pattern. But I would like to do more practicing, because even you can write stuff when you just from running scale. Sometimes just running scales or anything, you'll find something in that scale, or you'll put that scale over a different bass note just for fun for a second, and you're in a mode that you didn't think you'd be in, and then you got a song out of it. So yeah.
So yeah, you just mentioned this recent tour, Circles Around the Sun in Columbus. Holy shit, that was amazing.
Yeah, that was fun. We like Ohio. Ohio is the home of a bunch of funky people.
I'd love to hear your take on why you feel, on why you think your music can have the effect where it feels like 3 hours just goes by in the blink of an eye.
It's all about trying to make something new out of the songs that we, you know, make something new out of the tunes we have every night. So as long as you have a good beat and we have decent song structures, so you just kind of follow the song and the bits where you are allowed as much experimentation as possible, you see how far you can go and keep it within keeping it in. See how far you can go and make people dance. If they stop dancing, you've confused them. So in the, so we try to jam in these songs and keep it interesting enough and dancey enough that as long as you're moving, I guess, and you feel compelled to move, then time can go by pretty fast.
When you think back to, you know, you mentioned falling in love with funk music.
Mm.
The original epiphany you had where it's like, okay, this is all I want to do. What would you say it was about the music that was the reason for you to fall in love with it like that?
Well, because I had been a jazzer, not playing jazz, but I wanted to be a jazz musician since I was about 10. And my mom listened to jazz. She wasn't of the generation that was into the rock and roll thing. So she was a bit more jazzy. So I kind of came up with that. And one of the piano players I love is Thelonious Monk. And I was kind of obsessed with his sense of humor. He has a musical sense of humor that's not silly. It can come off as silly, but it's definitely not silly. It's deep, and there's a lot of darkness to it as well.
Describe that. How can you have a musical sense of humor that's deep and dark? Like, how would you explain that to someone who's like 7 years old?
Well, there's a lot of humor. There can be a lot of humor in melodies, as your melodies, in my opinion, are about the tension and release thing you were talking about. You kind of set up something. It's like a question and answer. One melody can sort of question the thing, and then it has an end piece that resolves most of the time. You can do anything you want, but Thelonious Monk has a way of phrasing that comes off a bit. It's humorous. There's something humorous to it. There's something sort of nah, 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 nah about it. You know, it's like that kind of thing. But he's a deep cat, and he's not trying to be silly. He just has this out sense of humor, and he wasn't the most sane of people. He probably would have had a lot of prescriptions if he had been around in this time. You know what I'm saying? He probably had a lot of undiagnosed stuff that they didn't care about back then. But so he had this humor, but there's also this darkness because there's, you know, a jazz scene. These are African-American cats. It wasn't the happiest of times all the time. So there's a darkness in that music. There's a depth in it. And he has this way of bringing this sense of humor into the melodies. And I fell in love with that. As soon as I heard Funkadelic, Bernie Worrell, keyboard player in that band, to me is the funky version of Thelonious Monk. He has a depth, and there's a sadness and a soulfulness in there, but a lot of his melodies are very schoolyard kind of meany. You know, they're silly in that way, but they never left me feeling like he was trying to be a clown or that band was silly or clowny. Even though they dressed up in crazy outfits and stuff, there was a lot of pain and depth in that music. And I don't know why it appealed to me so much, but I became obsessed with Funkadelic for a while. And it's different than other funk. There's something about it it's funny, but it's also, there's like terrifying. They're kind of scary. If I was a kid or somebody back then and I saw that band walking on the street, I'd probably think they were from a horror movie. I would run away. They were, you know, they were like, they look crazy. the music is crazy and but beautiful too. And Bernie Worrell is such a beautiful player. He didn't play like typical funk pianists or stuff. Like he really came from a classical background. And he didn't play any cliches of the time. He wasn't like, ooh, I'm funky. It was everything he did was really original and made it so much more funky than anybody else's stuff. Because it was completely its own thing. that's the guy that really turned me around. And I still, the kind of keyboards I play are still the ones that I always wanted when I was a kid because I heard him playing them. And I still play those. I don't know really how to describe. You have to listen to Thelonious Monk and to Funkadelic, and maybe you can hear what I'm talking about.
Hi, I'm Katie, producer of Weird Music Podcast. I want to give a big shout out to Voodoo Ranger. Live rangerously.
Well, if you made it this far, thank you for listening. Just want to let y'all know we've got these hand-dyed, ice-dyed Weird Music Podcast hoodies and also tees. If you'd like one, let us know. We'd love to get you one. And a big thank you to the geniuses over at Thrax CBD for sponsoring us with their amazing products. Also want to give a big thank you to J&J Distribution, Ohio's premier Delta 8 and CBD wholesale supplier. Retailers, check out their brands Cloud 8, Compassionate Buds, and Zaza. Got links in the description. And yeah, much love, y'all. Now back to the episode.
What song would you recommend as an entryway to Thelonious Monk?
Ooh, let's see. And you know what I always love? It was Thelonious Monk's solo. It's a record. It's just got a picture, like a drawing of him in a little pilot's, you know, the pilot goggles up on his forehead and the scarf, like he's flying a plane. It's called Solo. And I remember I had that for my mom had that. So it was one of the early records I had. It's just him playing by himself. I love that record. I'd say that would be a good way to get in because it's just him. He's playing a lot of tunes that he's known for, just by himself. You can really see his style. He's kind of got a stride style, but it just has a phrasing that you know it's him.
Earlier, you mentioned that the dark aspect in music and the depth and that being a central thing that you gravitated towards in like Funkadelic. I'm curious, just zooming out, looking at that a heavier, dark element of music. And what about that do you think can be so powerful?
Pain. I mean, pain is something we all understand on different levels. I think that's what a lot of music that touches people in a deep place, often that's from pain. I think they empathize with a sense of loss or the sense of a sun, you know, there's even pain in have you ever watched the most beautiful sunset and it broke your heart, you know? Like it's so beautiful that it hurts. There's a lot of music like that. I think there's a pain that we, you know, it's a depth and a taking a moment to see how beautiful everything is, even the darkness of it, even the sadness, even the that. I think that's a depth in music. There's also music to make you feel just happy and joyous, and that's fine as well. I have done both, and somehow Funkadelic managed to put them in the same thing. It's like happy and deep and dark at the same time. It's like put in the same room, and that's I don't know how they did it, and I that's always what I'm looking for. I mean, you know, Stevie Wonder's music has it. Some of his music is really happy and joyous. There's something in there. Sometimes it's some of his beautiful pieces of music are just so beautiful they hurt, you know. Mm-hmm. Even if he's not even singing about anything that's too painful, or it's just there's something in there that's so it breaks your heart, even if it's good. And breaking your heart is a sort of sadness. Hmm.
You mentioned pain, and like, you know, obviously with Circles Around the Sun, y'all have had to grieve. And, you know, it's that I feel like that's something that might be the hardest thing any human will ever have to do is grieve. And I'm curious with you, when we talk about darkness in music and you being a professional artist, what that was like for you and what that is like for you today, like feeling pain and also having to be professionally creative. And I'm just curious with you, like what handling grief and also being an artist has been like for you and just what you've learned about grief and emotion through all of that.
Well, one thing I've learned is that music is very cathartic, as we all know. It's a good place to go if you're grieving. For me, I can play on some themes, I guess. Oh, it sounds weird, but because the music is so improvisational, I can choose a thought to play on or a memory, you know, and I just, it'll give me a feeling before I start to do something. And then when I'm playing, I'm not necessarily thinking about that thing, but it's just like, set your point of reference, you know? Think about something, bam, and you're in this like whoa space, and then you play through that. And that can be really emotional. So if you're dealing with stuff with Neil passing and all that, it was hard to get back to music, but it can give you those kind of thoughts can give you a good roadmap to improvise. If you can, you know, I guess it's like acting, whatever. They tell actors to like conjure a memory or an emotion before they have to work on a scene. It's not as deep as it was, you know, 2 years ago when we were playing, or right before the pandemic, we did some shows. We did a couple tours with different guitar players, and yeah, that's really difficult. You miss your friend, and you think about it when you're playing because it's so fresh. But nowadays, no, I do think about him. But I'm saying specifically, I will think of other memories, whether they're tender or whatever it is, just to set a mood. And yeah, sometimes it gets really intense, and that can be really cathartic. You really play through like your emotion. And this is not, I'm not saying I get to this point every time I play, but it's really amazing. Every once in a while it does happen where you really connect with a feeling and you feel as though at that moment you are adequately prepared to like get that feeling out and be able to say it through music. Because most of the time I'm not a good enough musician that I feel like I can just, you know, play whatever I'm feeling. I know people like that and they're scared and I want to be them, but I'm not. And so for me, every once in a while that happens where you get an emotion, you get to a place and you can actually kind of play it out and all the notes work with what you're feeling. And that's great. And it does work cathartically. It does work something out. I mean, sounds really cheesy. It's happened a few times where like I'm tearing up a little bit because I'm thinking about something and then I'm playing to it and it gets me all verklempt. And then it's embarrassing because I'm on stage. So, but it has happened a few times. It's really, really cheesy. I hate to admit that, but I've become overcome with emotion.
I respect that. Some people might think that's cheesy, but I respect that a lot.
I mean, that's what, for this kind of music, it's a lot easier when we literally have these expanses where, you know, I can even take a couple seconds before I even have to play and go, who am I going to be right now? and then you do it. And so, yes, in this music, that's a big thing.
Can you share any other advice about understanding grief and working through it?
Advice about understanding grief. Jeez, grief is such a novel term until it really does happen. You think you know what that word is, right? And then, yeah, I'm still just trying to figure that out. Grief was a big thing. I mean, I did a lot of therapy work, you know, I have in the past as well, but especially after Neil passed. And yeah, grief was a big thing, and they were trying to get me to really understand the word. And I was like, yeah, grief, I know, yeah, I know the fucking word, good grief, whatever. And they're like, no, like, you got to get into this. And it's hard. I think I'm still trying to figure out where to put that. This is also really cheesy and embarrassing. I talk to him every once in a while, and that kind of makes things seem funny. It helps. You know, certain things will happen in your life that only you and one other person can really understand. You know, you have a friend like that where, like, you don't even have to like talk about anything. Somebody will do something and you just look at each other because you know you're both thinking the same thing. And all you gotta do is like look, and you don't even have to talk. That kind of stuff happens to me still, and he's the only person I would shed. So when it happens, I just talk in the air to him, and that makes things funny. And then it's not just grief though. I mean, for the situation that for what he did for suicide, it's there's a lot of anger as well. So I think I had to get to grief. I had to understand grief because I was pretty pissed initially. I mean, it's a shock and you're sad, but then you're like, you see everybody coming out of the woodwork of how much collateral damage there is when you do something like that. You see all these people grieving and coming out of nowhere, people you didn't know. You realize how big people's world actually is when they pull themselves out of it that fast. You know, it's a big impact crater, and you see that. And so there's anger there too, because you're like, how, you know, this is a lot of people's lives are just in a traffic jam right now because of what you did. You didn't have to do that. You know, we all had your back. And so that's hard. You get pissed. I was really mad at it. But that went away. And then there's grief. And then I don't think that ever goes away. And then you just miss the person. I just miss them. And that doesn't always hurt. Mm-hmm. Missing people doesn't always hurt. It's not always painful.
It can be it's love.
It's just missing them. It's just like, oh, sometimes it feels warm. You know, it's like you miss a, you can imagine what a cozy place in your house would feel like, or a cozy place when you were growing up or something. You can kind of put yourself there. It's a cozy place. And sometimes missing somebody is just a warm spot. You're familiar with it over time. It's, you know, it can be like a sanctuary. I know it doesn't pain me so much to think about him anymore. It's more, I more have these conversations with him, more I relate something that's going on to that situation, and it makes me feel better. And yeah, I miss him, but that's never going to go away. But it can be a nice place.
Well, hey, I appreciate you, you know, diving into the nitty gritty with me here. Want to jump it to the side though? We can pivot the topic here. I got some other questions for you.
Sure.
Can you talk to me about what advice you might give somebody about stage fright and being vulnerable enough to really be themselves on stage?
Is anybody really themselves on stage? That's the question. Or are we all these characters that we make?
What does it mean to even be yourself?
Exactly. No, we can go on this one. But stage fright. I'm not sure I really understand the concept of stage fright. I understand the concept of being very nervous to perform a show. I'm not sure if that's stage fright. I think stage fright is something else. I think people get crippling stage fright where just the idea of being in front of people is too much to deal with. Me, I only found the idea that I'm going to fuck up in front of people is too much to deal with. I don't mind the audience. What I mind is like, I don't want to fuck up, you know, so I get nervous. And then sometimes when you get nervous, it's harder to play, obviously, when you're nervous. When you're overthinking what you're doing and you're always, make sure you get it right, that's when you get it wrong. I don't know what the advice for that is, because I've over-practiced tunes to the point where I just mess them up because I'm thinking about them too much, like I was saying. I've psyched myself out. And then sometimes you just manage to, it just comes at you by surprise and you just, all of a sudden you've played it and you're like, oh, there it is, like done. You know, that's what I like the most. And sometimes I can just tell from even the sound check or something, like the band will just be on like fire that day, even though they don't know it yet. You know, it's like the show is going to be hot because the sound check, you can just tell. I'm like, ooh, like we're just playing around. No one's really caring. And I'm just like, all right, you know, and then 9 times out of 10, those shows will just be popping. And I feel confident to play those shows. It's a thing. Sometimes a good sound check, a good hang, and you just feel confident about what you're going to do. There's no like, oh man, hope we get it right. Oh, I don't know, we didn't get that at sound check. I hope they remember this, you know, that kind of stuff. When the band is, you know, it's not just you. It's, if you're in a band, it's the people you play with. It's how they make you feel, how you make them feel. Some days everyone just shakes hands without even thinking about it. And you just know that show is going to pop. And then it does. And you don't even have to worry about it. And you just go on stage and you know it. And you walk, oh, it is. And it is. And you walk off. Of course, I knew it, right? Those are the best ones. So I don't really know. I as far as just stage fright, like George Harrison supposedly had crippling stage fright stuff, I think that's different. I think that's just like people who have dreams about, like, you know, having to speak in front of their class with no underwear on or something. Like, I think that's stage fright.
I feel like there's a magic to what you're referring to with this feedback loop of, you know, you mentioned before, like not looking right at it kind of thing. I was listening today to a podcast. I'm just going to plug Lex Friedman. I was listening to Lex Friedman's podcast. Dude is amazing. Talking about Moby Dick, the story of Moby Dick, the man who was obsessed with catching Moby Dick. It was like a metaphor for this whale that, like, whales have eyes on the sides of their head. So you can never look a whale in its eyes. And it's this, like, he was constantly evading him and it bit his leg off and he couldn't, he was on this hell-bent mission to find Moby Dick and could never look it in its eyes. And it's almost like that's a metaphor to, you know, any transcendental thing you want to try to put your finger on.
That's true. I mean, the whole point of meditation is the same, right? I mean, I'm not a meditator. I wish I had tried, and it's been cool. I know somebody who was really into transcendental meditation. He actually taught it. He taught it at the ashram where I think he was there the year after. Remember when the Beatles and Donovan all went down to this ashram and there's all these photographs of them down there. And that song, Dear Prudence, which come out to play like that. So there's a woman named Prudence who was there and she just meditated so much and she'd never come outside. So they wrote the song. And so he was around for that. So he's deep in it. You know, he'd been doing it for 40, you know, whatever it's been since the late 60s. So doing it forever. And he taught me how to do it. It's really sweet of him. He's like, I'm just going to show you. It's really easy. And it is really easy. And I asked him, man, you've been doing this for so long. Is it just easy for you to just get to that spot? You know, what's it like for you? And he goes, it's just like anything for you. It's just the same. You know, every once in a while, you really, like, everything lines up and you get there. He said that he's able to find his place without a problem because he's been doing it for so long. But then he said, once he's there, there's still stuff. He's still thinking. There's still thoughts to go through. It's not this like nirvana mind thing that we're all thinking, oh man, this guy's been doing it 50 years. He's got to be great. He said, it's the same thing. You're still just monkey mind throwing ideas around and you're just trying to like push them away. You're focusing on something. So everything is happening around here on the sides and not, you know, it's not your focus. And he says every once in a while he gets to that amazing spot, but most of the time it's like, it's a slog, like it is for all of us. Like it is in music too. You know, you're trying, you know, you got this trying to focus. It is that thing where you're trying to get somewhere that you can't really see. You don't really know what it is. So if you focus too hard on trying to get there, you're never going to get there. You can't focus that hard on meditation. You won't get, you know what I mean? You have to focus through it. So you like pass through and then you're not really thinking about it, but you are it, you know? And It's cool to know that even the cats that spend their whole life trying to figure that shit out, it's still a hit or miss.
I'd love to hear you talk about what joining and playing with the Black Crowes was like, and like what sticks with you most from your time with them.
Boy, I was really lucky to have that gig. That was a, not many bands live like that. They were really old school. I think because they came up in the, when they were coming up and getting big, they were opening for bands like the Rolling Stones and Aerosmith and all these bands that were like juggernauts that had been touring, you know, big for the last 20 years, like all through 70s and 80s. They had like perfected the rock and roll touring. You know, the Stones would get the whole, whatever, the whole couple floors of the Four Seasons. And then, you know, it's just this opulent thing. And I wasn't around with the Crowes when they were at their peak, but even when I was playing with them in, I guess that was 2007, for a bunch of years after that, they still lived like that. And not many bands really do that. Like they just have a great aesthetic. And when they played, it was the most of like being in a train, like because Steve Gorman and his drums are just so, they're just commanding. His drums are commanding. And it was like a train. It felt like sometimes when that band was going, you're just on this giant locomotive and you're just cruising. And I've never felt anything like that. It's very specific with that band. It's big. When it gets going, it's big and it's fierce. And like, I had never done anything like that. I hadn't even, you know, I wasn't much of a rock and roll bluesy guy, really. I was funk and weird. I don't even know what I was trying to do, but it taught me a lot playing with them. And Chris is such a musicologist that, you know, just hanging out in the tour bus with him for all those years, I mean, I had my head split open as far as music goes. My whole record collection, all these records you can't see, that's all because of him. And once we started the CRB with Neil, Neil's a big record guy. So those two guys filled my head with records. All my musical education, a lot of it is from the Crowes. And then Neil because of Chris. But yeah, the Crowes, they live well. It was nice hotels. It was nice buses. It just felt like... all those fantasies you have about being in like the rock and roll band when you're a kid, that was it. So I was like pinching myself for a while, and it's great. I mean, it's a great gig. You don't have to set up your gear. It's nice. Hotels are nice. Music is great. Chris is, you know, he's going to probably, in the next 20 years, he's going to probably end up as one of the top 100 frontmen of all time. You know, he's a real shaman guy. He can move energy around. That's what you got to be to great front people. And, you know, I think if Chris had been born 1,000 or, you know, 20,000 years ago, he would have been a crazy shaman person. That, you know what I mean? Would have been in the cave with all like, and that they would have been like, oh, you know. So that's just what people like that end up doing now. A lot of them end up being frontmen because what else are you going to do? You know? So he definitely has that thing. So that's fun. It's great to be in a band where your front man, you trust your front man is that much of a badass. That feels good. It's hard. It's hard to be in a band that has that much confidence. They have confidence. That's a big thing. I guess that's what it is. I didn't know anything about it. I was just along for the ride. But like in hindsight, that band just had confidence. They would just get on stage, do what they do. And it was usually great because they know what they're doing. And the lifestyle was sick. And yeah, that was a really good time. And it turned into the CRBU, which I met Neil. So that was different.
Hey, everyone out there, if you listen this far, we got links in the description. Language, New Circles Around the Sun record coming out April 28th. Definitely get excited for that. And yeah, we'll have a link to keep up with all things Circles Around the Sun on socials and all that good stuff here. Just got a couple more questions for you, Adam, as we're wrapping up here. Can you talk to me about what you've learned, you know, up until this point in your life about what brings you meaning and fulfillment?
You just keep digging for the deep ones. Finding peace, I suppose, as I'm getting older, used to try and find happiness all the time. Peace is better. I think that's a big thing for me. Trying to be in situations where it's calm. Music, calm. Even if it's intense and stuff, there's something about, there's a stateliness to even a big piece of music or an intense thing. It's just a little space in there where you can sit and be comfortable and be at peace. And I find a lot of that is because I'm really into drums and grooves and stuff because of my funk background. And that's a whole thing. Finding the perfect pocket is peaceful. There's a peacefulness when you can just sit in that pocket and you know this is your seat and it fits your butt. And you can just, you feel this peace where like you can make these little decisions. You can think clearly and kind of do stuff because there's no like, there's no chaos. There's no pushing and like, you know, and that's a hard place to find because bands are different people and everyone's got their own idea of where they're surfing that wave, you know. But I think the biggest takeaway for me is trying to find peace because that means there's less drama, right? And drama is something that is really tied into music, really tied into the lifestyle. And there's a lot of it, especially when you're young in this business. There's a lot of drama, a lot of this. Oh, it's so important. This is all we got, you know. I found that all I want in life now is just peace. It's not a specific thing. It's not an amount of money. It's not a happiness. It's not a situation. It's not an RV. It's not a motorcycle. It's just being able to sit there and feel like you can be in the moment and not be stressed. I guess it's very simple. That's all I want is peace. So I look for that in music too, and everything. There's a magic feel in a 4-bar phrase or an 8-bar phrase, a drum, a rhythm. And you can get to these perfect grooves, which so many amazing songs have. They find it where it's not pushing, it's not pulling, it's just right in the perfect spot, and everything people do on top of it, they can just drop little notes exactly where they want them because everything is just feels so good. It's not pushing anywhere, it's just right there. And that's all I want, is that place. There's like a movement in your butt. It just feels like that. Yeah, sorry, rambling. But
no, Adam, I have loved this conversation. I can honestly say, like, I think this is like number 100 and something, and this has been one of the podcasts I've enjoyed the most in getting to do this.
Well, it's probably because I'm delirious from driving from your neck of the woods to Los Angeles in 48 hours.
Wiped out that the thing that would get in the way.
Yeah. Yeah, peace. Peace is the, not like peace. Peace worth more than anything else. An uncluttered mind.
Easier said than done.
Really, really. Yeah, I don't think I've ever. I mean, I guess it's the only times I really feel as though my mind's not cluttered and I can get out of my own way is when I'm playing music to that point where you just feel like you can do what you want. It's that confidence in your mind. And I'm not a fast one of these. I don't know how to do a lot of this stuff. So for me, it really is like I have these themes that I want to get, and if I can pull them off, it's amazing. And you pull it off and you're like, I can't believe I pulled it off. Pull the next thing up. Oh, I can't believe that. And it just goes, and then you're out of your way and you're out of your head. You're gone. And that's the most peaceful place I have been able to find. There've been some outdoor nature stuff where I'm like, whoa, you know, but really to just have that feeling of you don't know where you've been for a bit without any drugs, you know? If you get out of your way, I think when you're out of your way, you're not thinking, it's almost like your ego's gone. It's weird. It's like you're just out of the way and you just play stuff and you're hearing it back and going, oh, that's great. It's almost like I hear it for the first time. It's weird. But sometimes it really gets to that point where it feels like you're being played as opposed to you playing. That's pretty rare, but that's worth all of it. And that's truly that piece, because there's no worry in that place. There's no fear in that place. There's no future tripping in that place. There's no past tripping in that place. It's just what all sentient creatures are always trying to do, because we are self-aware, is to try to lose that, right? It's the whole thing, lose the ego, right? We've become self-aware, we've become these amazing creatures that understand that we exist. We can look in a mirror and go, hey, that's me. You know? So that's, which can't, you know, cats don't do that, dogs don't do that, dolphins do that, elephants do that, monkeys do that, we do that. Can see a reflection and know it's you. Cat might be like, cat, you know, but they don't know it's them. So once we've reached this place of understanding who we are, now we're just trying to kill it, right? We hate it. We hate being aware. We got to get rid of the ego. And so all of the heavy meditation stuff is to try to be in a place where you're only in the moment, the present moment. So you're not future tripping, you're not past tripping. You're just in that moment. And I think that's those little bits that my friend who does transcendental meditation was talking about, those times when you feel that, is what I would imagine it feels like to be in that space when you're really firing on all cylinders and you're improvising and you're somehow able to pull off what you're trying to do. It feels like that. Feels like you could have the worst worries, you know, something could have just happened that's terrible. For that moment, it's gone. You forgot about it. Doesn't matter. I've had shows like that where, like, right before I got to go on stage, I'm like, I don't even know I'm going to play this show because the worst thing just happened to me, you know. 45 minutes later, whatever, I have a moment and I'll look up and be like, whoa, I completely, like, it comes back to you. You're like, oh my God, this terrible thing just happened. But you had 45 minutes and you weren't even thinking about it. And these are really bad things, like things that shouldn't leave your head, you know, like something that's bad enough that's like, that is going to stick in your craw for a long time. Get on stage and it's gone. If you're having one of those shows and you're able to do it, it's what meditation is. In the absolute present moment, nothing matters, past or future. And that's actually what the universe looks like, right? Because we're always processing the universe. You don't actually live in the moment. We're always going, oh, what just happened? So you think about what just happened, right? But when it's happening, you know what I mean? Like, you're not in the moment. We're processing it all the time. Even our brains takes a little second to process. Even what we're processing isn't actually what's happening. What's happened already happened. You're processing it. It's already gone. It's done.
It's a latency.
Yeah. Like you're always missing it because it's always gone. Right. So I'm really lucky to be in art. And I think there's a lot of art can really help you get to that place where you are in the present moment and you can feel peace like that. All the art, I mean, everything has its own thing. Sex, everything has their own place where they can get to that. But I think art is like a pretty tangible way to do it with your clothes on. And so it's great. It's lucky. I wish that this, not to get on the soapbox, I wish this country gave more of a crap about that. You know, I got lucky because I went to a high school in New York that was it was an art school, it was a public school, it was music and art, and that's great. But those kind of schools, there's not that many of them left. I would hope, if anything I could ever bring to this world would be focus more on mental health and focus more on like making children feel as though there really is magic in the arts and that it's not just something that you know, do when you're not doing the important stuff in your life, you know?
Totally. Totally. And I will say, I feel like conversation also can be one of those things that takes you out of that present trip, past tripping, future tripping kind of thing. Like right now I'm not stoned and I feel like I'm like looking at a sunset. Like I feel that feeling just talking to you, you know, at this level, like I'm doing nothing other than just in this moment with you, like hearing your words, describing all of this. This has been an amazing conversation, Adam. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks. I'm probably just a windbag at this point. Where did you grow up in New York?
Right outside New York City, Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, okay. I grew up in New York and it's, man, we were just back there. I was back there for a few days because there's a band called The Grateful Shred that some of the guys from Circles plays in. And we did a tour with them and then tour with Cats without any break in the middle. But it was in New York for a few days. And yeah, it was just so nice to be able to just get anywhere I wanted to go. It's so great because when I have days off in New York, I just go all around the city because I grew up here. So I go to all these places and I walk around and remember stuff and there's streets that I just walk down and it feels like what I'm talking about with Neil. It feels like it's like sad, but it's memory. It's you miss it, but it's peaceful. It's great. Nice to be
you
there.
Like that feeling, that like nostalgic.
I do.
Like I'm mourning your childhood kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm really into that. I don't know what that is. I got to get into why.
I can't get my mind out of that stuff these days, honestly.
I've always been that way. I've always liked old music and old stuff. And I like to go to like old houses or those old boats. Sometimes you'll be on tour somewhere and they'll, you know, you pass like this, like an old ship museum, right? And you can go on these, and I'll just go in a little room, find a place on a boat where nobody is and sit there. You feel all this energy. Like I said, I'm not one of those, I'm not like a ghost person or anything. Like, but spaces have energy. And some of those really old places, you can just get in a room and you just feel something. You feel something in there. It's really, it makes me, and New York is like that. There's a lot of old streets in New York. A lot of places you'll just turn a corner and like my whole body will be like, oh, just feel like something. Just feel something about that street. Feel something about rooms. You're going like a house and you walk in a room and you're like, oh, no way. We got to get out of that room. Yeah. The spaces, you know, the spaces themselves have these.
Absolutely.
Energies that I don't even know what that is, but I feel that deeply. And I guess it's a nostalgic thing. I love going to places that have a history and just kind of like standing around or just walking around it and looking at all the little minutiae of the streets or just sitting on a stoop or sitting in a place and getting a feel for the space. So yeah, I love New York and you can get around. Like I said, that's the whole point is, I can get to all the different places in the city within a day. It's easy. The subway is so great over there. It just takes no time to get around. I can't I can't imagine being a teenager and growing up in a place that didn't have that. I'm so lucky I grew up in New York City because